Spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
The trade deadline has come to pass, and like we said last week, we were hoping to talk about at least one trade, and we've had a couple, actually, and a couple moves to be done as well, and kind of a bittersweet farewell to, as you like to put it, my boy, Bud Norris.
Well, Bud Norris was more of a DFA move, along with outfielder Travis Snyder, of course, that was expected sooner
or
later.
As soon as they got Gerardo Parra, it was kind of the death knell for him. It was like, left fielder, okay, we've got an everyday left fielder, he hits .320, he is better than you.
Yeah, and not to mention he's got two gold gloves to his name as well, and that was desperately needed in the Orioles' offense, whether it be left field or right field. Looking at the trade deadline, I was shocked that they made two moves, because I thought that, well, like you said on our last episode of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, which you can find on
sfmsports.net, as always, in Audio Boom,
Stitcher and Spreaker,
those are the ones we really like to also push as well, because they don't get a lot of pub.
No, absolutely not. And on Facebook, check us out at the Baltimore Sports Free for All Podcast. On Twitter, follow us, retweet us at BSportsFree, the number for all, and check us out on our occasional blog at sportsblog.com. Like you mentioned on the last episode, you said if this team made more than three moves, we were having a dumpster fire, we were having a sale. Pretty much, and we were mailing it in for...
I wouldn't necessarily say three moves is a sale, but I'm talking about if they got rid of three of those guys that we were talking about who have expiring contracts. In terms of that, they didn't really get rid of anybody with an expiring contract except for Tommy Hunter.
Yeah, and I'm actually shocked that the Chicago Cubs... I guess maybe this is just past history with the success they've had with... Jake Arrieta.
Like, bring him over.
Pedro Strop.
We'll take good care of him.
Bring Tommy Hunter over. Yeah, I mean, he's going to be pitching against starting pitchers sometimes. That's an out. That's a guaranteed out. If, you know, Tommy Hunter's throwing that 99-mile-an-hour fastball he brings, absolutely bring it over. Bring that four-seamer over. So, Tommy Hunter, whose face will live in infamy at Oriole Park at Camden Yards for being that guy to hog all the Bud Lights during the AL East Championship celebration in 2014, he'll definitely be missed, but let's be honest, it sort of wasn't meant to be, I guess you could say, for one Thomas Hunter.
Let's put it this way. If you can say, what have you done for me lately and everything that's been going on, but Bud Norris, Tommy Hunter, what have you done for us lately?
Would it have been crazy to sort of had hindsight 2020 and just look into the future, and this past offseason, even though he was your boy, you would have been like, hey, Dan, listen, this is right. No. I know you don't know who I am, but just listen to me for a second. You have to trade Bud Norris right now, okay? I'm looking into the future. It's not good. He's coming off a 15-game winning season. He had a sub-4 or a sub-3.75 earned run average. Trade the guy now. You'll get an all-star outfielder. You'll thank me later.
Oh, good grief.
Yeah, I know.
If nobody has hindsight, Josh. If everybody has hindsight, there wouldn't be a lottery.
Exactly. And also, we would be drafting perfectly in the NFL drafts, the NBA
But then
drafts.
Everybody would be drafting perfectly.
Everybody would be perfect at everything, and that would make life fun.
Where's the competition in that? I mean, if everything is perfect, then nothing can be perfect in that situation, because somebody's going to end up being hurt.
Well, before we get to the Orioles Week in Review, we have to review the man that the Orioles traded for, the guy that started the commotion at the trade deadline, and that was Gerardo Parra, who... has been coming off a career year with the Milwaukee Brewers in 2015, hit .328, .369 OBP, has 9 home runs, 31 RBIs, and basically has been one of their best offensive players until the Orioles traded for him for minor league pitcher Zach Davies.
And there's that in the fact that he's my age.
Yeah, that too. He's not necessarily a young buck in baseball terms, but he's in the prime of his career, two-time gold glover.
I'm not an old man here, John. If anything, you're older than I am.
I know. Don't rub it in. Also, he does have postseason batting experience. He played with the Arizona Diamondbacks in 2011 when they went to the NLDS. You know what his career batting average is in the NLDS? 1 for 18. So he can only go up from here, Ray.
It can only get better.
It can only get better.
I mean, it was his first appearance. Give him a break.
Yeah, it was his only appearance. His career fielding percentage as an outfielder is .983. His overall best is in right field at .988. And like I said earlier, this was a position of need that the Orioles so desperately needed. Until they called Ariel Alvarez from AAA. I don't know what I'm waiting on. I'm gonna be banging this to the ground. I'm gonna be beating this horse dead to the ground every week until Buck makes the move and calls the young guy up from
Ariel Alvarez. I thought his name was Daryl Alameda.
I thought his name was Daryl Alvey. I mean, Buck was doing so much to make us forget about the kid, but he just seems to be doing great up in Norfolk.
Yeah, because in professional sports, a young guy can be the big spark that you need in a lineup and in any type of team. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger took a team to the playoffs his rookie year. Joe Flacco took a team. What am I doing? What am I doing, Josh? I am sounding like a caller in a sports talk radio in Baltimore. I am comparing football to baseball. What is wrong with me right now? Did somebody hit me over the head with a steel chair or something like that? Did Rowdy Roddy Piper come from the depths of heaven and hit me in the head with a coconut?
I wouldn't say the depths of heaven. It would be more the heights of heaven. But, yeah, we got all those subjects. We have all those subjects to talk about.
Piper's pit in heaven. You can only come up from a pit.
That is you know what? You're right. You're absolutely right. That is very true. Yeah, we got football to talk about. Obviously, the Ravens' top five stories in NFL training camp. Obviously, going to be remembering the legendary Rowdy Roddy Piper. And also talk about Ronda Rousey giving him some love at UFC 190.
She remembered Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But we'll get to that shortly in this podcast. But looking at the Orioles, we can review. They actually had a good week. 7 games, 5-2 record.
Yeah, 5-2 record. You cannot complain about that whatsoever because going 5-2 and heading into... Yeah, we'll talk about that a little later. Let's not talk about this big, huge West Coast trip that's coming up right now. And let's just more talk about, let's put a little more emphasis on the good because a lot of sports shows, they like to put emphasis on the bad. We like to go a little bit further and say, well, this is what's working. Why don't you continue to do this? And right now what the Baltimore Orioles did is they are continuing their winning ways. And 5-2 is something that you look at in the record books and you're saying, wow, that's really good, especially considering that they were coming off of a 5-game winning streak. That streak was snapped, but at the same time, it was still an exciting fashion in which it was snapped because you almost thought for a second that the Orioles were going to come back in that game on Thursday.
Absolutely, and we'll get to that game on Thursday, but let's start with the week in review, which started on Monday, July 27th. Nick Markakis, the former hero in right field at Oriole Park at Camden Yards, made his return as an Atlanta Brave as the Braves visited the Orioles. On the Monday game, the Orioles went into the 11th inning and won the game 2-1. Brad Brock was the winner at 4-2. Avalon, the loser, at 2-4. Tuesday, July 28th, the Braves face against the Orioles once again, losing 7-3. Good Ubaldo Jimenez wins the game at 8-6. Teheran was the loser at 6-6. And Wednesday, July 29th, against the Braves, Orioles shut them out 2-0. Good Tillman, the Good Tillman that's been good in the last several starts, won the game at 8-7.
But you know who was also, it's Good Tillman, but what did I say? We'll get to that a little bit later.
Of course. Folchiniewicz, I think his name was. Yeah, it's a very odd name here. 3-3, the loss. Britton collected his 26th save of the season. Thursday, July 30th was a tough one for the Baltimore Orioles as they were clawing back in the later innings. Unfortunately, were not able to defeat Alfredo Simon, former Oriole, who collected a win at 10-6. Miguel Gonzalez, having the rare terrible start, was the loser at 9-7. Wilson collected his first save of the season. However, the next night on Friday, July 31st, the trade deadline, this was, of course, when the Orioles were down a significant amount of runs and a run differential once again. Gerardo Parra arrived at Oriole Park. The fans saw him. They cheered. And that may have lifted the Orioles' spirits. As the Orioles won that game 8-7, Mikal Givens was your winner at 1-0, or is it Michael Givens?
It's Michael Givens.
Michael Givens, yeah. It's you look at the name, it looks like it should be spelled differently, but no, it's Michael Givens was the winner at 1-0. Valdez, the loser at 0-1. Zach Britton collected his 27th save of the season. Saturday, August 1st, the Orioles won 6-2. Kevin Gausman put in up a great start for the Orioles, improves the 2-2 as your winner. Sanchez, the loser, 10-9.
Can you say that Kevin Gausman, in terms of all the, well, the trade talks are done and gone, but can you say that Kevin Gausman, in terms of any types of moves going forward, is untouchable?
I would hope so. I hope he doesn't have many options left, because we know well enough the Orioles have given us enough headaches with the send downs and call ups and this and that, the DFAs, and we really hope that, with the exception of Teryl Alvarez getting called up, that will be like the last move the Orioles make, and then they can say, okay, this is the roster we're going to have going forward. And unfortunately, the Orioles weren't able to collect a series win against Detroit as they lost 6-1 on Sunday. Norris, the winner, 2-1. Bad Ubaldo Jimenez, the loser at 8-7.
I've put a curse on him, Josh. I have put a curse on Ubaldo Jimenez by saying that, watch, Chris Tillman's going to get good and Ubaldo's going to get bad. It's just going to be what happens with this club. There can't be two really gigantic good pitchers on this team at the gigantic good. What the hell am I saying here? Okay, there cannot be good aces on the two good aces on this team. There can only be one.
Do you want to review hitting first, or do you want to review pitching first?
I'm good with pitching, considering the fact that in terms of the Orioles' two losses this week, it was because of the pitching.
All right. Looking at the Orioles this past week, pitching-wise, let's start with the good. Obviously, Zach Britton coming in two games, collecting two saves.
They got him locked up for so many years, too. I mean,
yeah,
this is
arbitration, yeah.
Behold something special here, Baltimore. You are seeing maybe the birth of a fantastic closer. The closes are a dime a dozen, and just as quick as they rise, they fall. Look at Eric Gagne. Look at, what was that one guy that the Orioles had that went to Toronto and became very good? B.J. Ryan.
B.J. Ryan, yeah. Looking at that, Zach Britton collecting two saves, Michael Givens making his first appearance for the Orioles, went 1 2/3 shutout innings, had two strikeouts, no walks. Darren O'Day in two games, 2 1/3 shutout innings, five strikeouts, one walk. So Darren O'Day returning back to dominance after he had his first loss of the season the previous week. Julio Rondon, the Venezuelan AAA pitcher that was called up from the Orioles, pitched 3 1/3 shutout innings against the Detroit Tigers on Sunday in relief for Ubaldo Jimenez, gave up three hits, had one strikeout, no walks. But I guess it's nice to see Buck being able to call up guys from AAA and being able to fill the void that is needed in long relief. But like we've always said about long relievers, they are nice to see when they're trying to keep a game competitive, but you really don't want to see them too much when your team's losing. Now, Chris Tillman was your pitcher. Actually, Chris Tillman and Kevin Gausman were your co-pitchers of the week here. Chris Tillman went 8 2/3 shutout innings, was one out away from a complete game shutout.
Yeah, I was just following this because I was away from my television at the time, so I had to just follow it on MLB Game Track, and also seeing my friends and their tweets and everybody that are sending out. I was like, hey, anybody get a load of what the game Chris Tillman's got going on right now? I'm like, yeah, I'm seeing it on my phone right now. And thank you, MLB, MLB streaming service, for charging me to watch my team play.
Yeah, so Chris Tillman, in the one start this week, pitched a gem, 8 2/3 shutout innings, gave up four hits, no walks, two strikeouts, in just regular Chris Tillman dominant fashion. And Kevin Gausman, in the first start in what seemed like forever against the Detroit Tigers, seven shutout innings, but two earned runs off four hits, six strikeouts, no walks, 2.57 earned run average. You will take that any time from the young gun Kevin Gausman there, Ray.
I will take that indeed from Kevin Gausman. And as I said, I think he's untouchable, Josh.
I think so, too. And what did I say last year after the postseason? I said he was the next Jim Palmer. And that was Palmer-esque if it was Palmer on a bad day.
Well, yeah. Considering
and Palmer's a Hall of Famer.
Jim Palmer could pitch, what, 15 innings?
Exactly. You're not going to see that anytime soon in this modern era of baseball. But starting pitching was the downfall this week if we were looking at other starters. Ubaldo Jimenez went 1-1, which is good because he collected a win, but he collected a loss, and boy, did that inflate his ERA to a weekly 6.17. Yep, 10 hits in 11 and two-thirds innings. Gave up four home runs there. Actually, no, two home runs. I'm sorry. Two home runs that Ubaldo gave up. Miguel Gonzalez in the one loss had a 13.50 earned run average. Gave up five earned runs off 10 hits and three and one-third innings pitch. Wei-Yan Chen didn't collect the loss but looked terrible irregardless. Three and one-third innings pitch, six earned runs off 10 hits, posting a 6.20 earned run average. So, Miguel Gonzalez, Wei-Yan Chen, you'll give him a pass, but like you were saying about Ubaldo Jimenez, he is sort of cursed.
Slipping.
Yeah, he's cursed at the moment. Let's go to Orioles hitting, where this week was more ruled by the catchers, if not more than anybody else. Matt Wieters and Caleb Joseph, I guess you can say, are your co-players of the week here, considering that they've hit 375 or better. But let's start with Matt Wieters. 7 for 15, one run scored, hit three doubles, and two RBIs. Even if the guy doesn't hit the long ball again, this is the Matt Wieters you want to see on a daily basis, a guy that can get you that double, a guy that can move the runners over.
It kind of is, but then it kind of isn't because he's in a contract year, Josh.
Exactly. Caleb Joseph, in the time he played in the four games, 3 for 8, scored two runs, hit a home run, four RBIs, 375 batting average. And what we say about Caleb Joseph?
That is what you want to see.
Yeah, that is what you want to see, and that's what we've been seeing regularly the past several weeks from the, well, we can't say young because he's nearly the same age as Matt Wieters, but yeah.
He's in the same age as Matt Wieters, but he has a different agent than Matt Wieters, and he also doesn't have the contract year that Matt Wieters has. So yeah, you don't want to see that from Matt Wieters because, yeah, contract year, but you do want to see that from Caleb Joseph because that's your replacement.
I want to recant my earlier statement when I said Matt Wieters and Caleb Joseph were your co-offensive players of the week. Your true offensive player of the week, first baseman, Chris Davis, 7 for 21, 5 runs scored, 4 home runs, 12 runs driven in, 333 batting average, and 2 walks. He got 2 walks again, Ray.
Yeah, I think he thought he was going somewhere and he wanted to make a good impression, but hopefully he can keep this up because, as we know with Chris Davis, he's very streaky. When he's red hot, he is white hot. And when he's cold, he is ice cold. So hopefully Chris Davis can keep up this pace and become like that elite home run hitter that he was a couple years ago. And maybe, just maybe, you can justify signing him at the end of the year?
Maybe. Manny Machado having a good week, going 2 home runs, 4 RBIs, 320 batting clip. Jonathan Scope hit a solo home run this week, collecting 1 RBI, 313 batting average. And other than that, really, I guess you could say the other guys, Adam Jones and J.J. Hardy. Jones had 2 home runs, 6 RBIs. Hardy had a solo home run, but they batted 240 or less. But then again, if a guy is batting 240 or less, I guess as long as he contributed and hit a home run, that sort of has to count, right?
Yes, unless it was a solo home run. You lose the game 8-1.
Yeah,
that kind of doesn't count.
That's very true. So the Orioles go 5-2 this week against the Braves and the Detroit Tigers, respectively, at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. It's nice to see them go 5-2, 3 games above 500, and find themselves in the hunt for both the AL. Yes, even though the Yankees have a big lead in the AL East, it's still a hunt. The month's not over yet. We still got August. We still got September. And history has shown that that teams with guys who are over the age of 35 or older don't necessarily stay hot for too long. So the Orioles, as of this podcast, are 53-51, 6 games back behind the Yankees. However, the AL wild card is getting very, very interesting. The LA Angels have a 1.5 game advantage over the other teams. Minnesota Twins, Toronto Blue Jays are currently in a standstill with a 5-14 winning percentage and are tied for the second wild card spot. The Orioles are only a half game back behind the second wild card spot. So, hey, if you can't aim high, I guess aim WC wild card. Aim for that right there.
I would say so.
Yeah. Real quick before we get to our next segment, we do have to talk about, yep, another Orioles ticket giveaway. I mentioned the Minnesota Twins being one of the other teams that are in the hunt for the wild card. Now, let's say you're a son or daughter that have a great mom in your life or a great father in your life who you want to take to the game and just be able to have a nice time at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. But at the same time, a meaningful game, a game that will mean something, especially late this month, which would be on Thursday, August the 20th. I'll get to that in a bit. Or let's just say you have a boyfriend or girlfriend or husband or wife you just want to take to the game just to have fun and get away from the house. Well, here's the game for you right here. On Thursday, August the 20th at 7.05 p.m. at Oriole Park at Camden Yards, the Minnesota Twins come to town to face the Orioles. The seats, Section 92, Row 4, Seats 4 and 5. Two tickets right there. All you have to do, Ray, is go online, interact with our social media updates, whether it be on Twitter or Facebook, and the person that likes our stuff the most, that shares our stuff the most, comments, what have you. It has to be interaction. The most notable, the most passionate, the most well-perceived will be the winner of these tickets.
Most well-perceived?
Yeah, most well-perceived. Like, if we look at it and say, wow, that was some impressive sharing right there. That was an impressive like. That was an impressive comment. I like where this is going. Okay.
I don't know how you can count that, though, in terms of quantifying
we
that.
We have a way. We have a system to count it. We do have a system to count it. So there it is, your Orioles Week in Review and the ticket giveaway update. We will be posting all week on Facebook and Twitter, so be sure to stay tuned. And we will announce a winner on our social media pages next Monday as we get prepared for another episode of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
In 2014, the Baltimore Ravens shocked critics by going 10-6 overall and winning the AFC divisional round against, actually scratch that, the AFC wildcard round against the Pittsburgh Steelers and losing a tough divisional loss against the, I guess, the future Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. But either way,
the future tainted.
The future tainted, yeah.
Super Bowl champions.
Let's
and
rephrase that, the asterisk dictated.
I like how you're still in baseball mode, by the way, because of the whole division. You thought they were divisional round was like the first round, which it kind of is in baseball.
Yeah.
But they got that wild they got that wild card play-in game as well. So you look forward to that. And, yeah, despite critics, despite the early season musings that Joe Flacco doesn't play catch with his receivers in the offseason.
What are they going to do at running back? Ray Rice is suspended for the rest of the year.
Granted, that was at the beginning of the year and not in the actual offseason, so there's no way they could have prepared for it, but still.
Torrey Smith can't catch. Well, Torrey Smith's not there anymore, so we got an entirely different story with the Baltimore Ravens heading into training camp. Yes, we are talking Baltimore Ravens as a subject here on the Baltimore
Sports
Free-for-All.
Is this the first time we have devoted an entire segment to the Ravens this entire offseason?
At least for the summer, I believe.
Yeah, I suppose that's a good thing, considering that usually when you do feature a Raven story as a whole segment in the offseason, it's usually because one's getting arrested.
Yeah.
You didn't hear much about that this year.
Well, that seems to be the unfortunate thing that happens with most NFL teams, is that the only way they get mentioned, the only way they start discussion, is if a player gets arrested or blows their fingers off during the 4th of July celebrations.
Jason Pierre-Paul, by the way, if you see the pictures of his and these, I mean, the medical records, that's private one thing, but to actually like see him in a cast out in the public eye for the first time, is like something looks like it's missing in that cast.
Yeah. Well, we're at least 2 weeks away from the Ravens' first preseason game of the year as they will host the New Orleans Saints. Drew Brees still hasn't beaten the Baltimore Ravens yet, but again, that game doesn't count.
Throw salt, why don't you?
Yeah, throw salt. So, yeah, Thursday, August 13th will be the opener, but we got a little ways to go before we get to that first game and talk about what we need to see and what we need to look forward to, but here are my five here for the must-see stories, the must-look-for stories in regards to the 2015 NFL training camp with the Baltimore Ravens. Let's start with the first story, the top story, and I'm sure you can concur with this as well. The development of the wide receiver slash tight end corps.
Well, wide receivers has always been something that you look at when it comes to the Baltimore Ravens club, especially in the early days with Travis Taylor, Kadri Ismail, and Patrick Johnson, Jermaine Lewis. Everybody was talking about that tandem at wide receiver and saying, huh, other than Kadri Ismail, all those other guys, well, Jermaine Lewis at punt return, but all those other guys, like, huh, makes you want to scratch your head. and then trying to get other people, and Travis Taylor becomes a bust, and everybody else is complaining about the wide receiver core here in the Baltimore Ravens. So how good is this wide receiver crew this year? It's always a topic going into training camp.
Well, you got Steve Smith Sr., who is pushing up there in age in regards to...
He was pushing up there in age last year. Look how that ended.
Yeah, exactly. As you look at Steve Smith Sr.'s numbers from 2014, 79 receptions, 1,065 yards, and 6 touchdowns, which... the yards and the receptions led the team there. Of course, you don't have Torrey Smith to play alongside anymore. Now you have the first rounder out of UCF, and that was Breshad Perriman out of Central Florida there. Breshad Perriman, 6'2", 218 pounds, a guy that's got a lot of potential and a lot of potential, a high ceiling there for the wide receiver.
Let's put this pronunciation out there so everybody can get it. It is Breshad Perriman.
Not Breshad Perriman. Not Breshad or Breshad.
It's Breshad Perriman.
Breshad Perriman did have a little nick, I guess you could say, in terms of injuries.
And it was the topic of the week in terms of sports talk radio, because as soon as you hear about an early training camp injury, it all harkens back to one name, and that's Jamal Lewis. Everybody remembers that name, because if it wasn't for a Jamal Lewis injury, who knows what could have happened with this Baltimore Ravens ball club when they try to re-sign all those guys, when they try to keep them on for another year on that Super Bowl winning team.
Well, you do have to mention Dennis Pitta, because he also suffered a training camp injury, but he will be discussed shortly here. But yeah, Breshad Perriman did suffer a leg injury, which of course is normal in training camp. You're going to go through the bumps and the bruises, and... most NFL medical staffs are so advanced nowadays that they do not want all their players injured. They don't want all their guys bruised up, especially if they're the first overall pick or the first round pick for that team this year. So, yeah, Steve Smith Sr., I think, is a great receiver to learn from, especially if you're Perriman. And looking at other guys on the roster, too, you have Kamari Aiken, who made a couple of catches last year for the Ravens, scored 3 touchdowns. And is also a former player from UCF. So he and Perriman, I guess you can say, are going to have a camaraderie, so to speak, as teammates. But, you know, Aiken as well as Perriman are going to be fighting for that number 2 spot at wide receiver. And Aiken's going to do everything he damn well can to keep Perriman from starting, which, unless Perriman totally stinks in the preseason, that may happen. But... yep, you got Marlon Brown out there as well. Marlon Brown trying to find his niche for the first time since 2013. You also have Michael Campanaro, who is listed as one of your punt returners for this upcoming season if he stays healthy. And moving on to tight end, according to the depth chart here, the projected depth chart here, according to ESPN, Crockett Gilmore is your starting tight end over Max Williams. Do you agree with that?
Crockett Gilmore.
Yeah, the same Crockett Gilmore that scored a touchdown against the Steelers in the postseason last year.
Hey, it's because of that. That's why he's got it right there.
But do you think, looking at Max Williams, who arguably was the best tight end in the draft in 2015, 6'4", 250 pounds, a kid at 21 years of age that reminds people of number 86 Todd Heap. I mean, do you think it's possible that maybe we're jumping the gun here in the tight end battle, and maybe we're leaving out Dennis Pitta too soon?
Maybe, in terms of the fact that, hey, he could be coming back, but it's kind of tough to come back from 2 consecutive hip injuries on either side. And with the tight end battle of Crockett Gilmore over Max Williams, maybe it is right now in terms of seniority, because both guys, I mean, really haven't shown much in terms of what they can do at the pro level. So I guess they're just going with the seniority factor and see what they can get out of Crockett Gilmore. I mean, they wouldn't pick him up if they didn't have any type of interest in him. So I guess it's kind of an open competition at tight end right now, and they're going to see what exactly they can get out of both these guys in terms of depth at tight end.
Number 2 story for NFL training camp with the Baltimore Ravens is the safety battles. Yes, we will have safety competitions this year. Big story coming out of Owings Mills. Matt Elam, former first rounder at the University of Florida, Matt Elam, out for the remainder of the 2015 NFL season with a torn bicep injury.
There's your Jamal Lewis of this year.
Yeah, but does it surprise me that there were so many comments saying, well, to be honest, he didn't play up to his potential.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah. And according to the depth charts here, Will Hill is going to be your starting strong safety in that position, along with newly acquired free safety Kendrick Lewis, who will be starting opposite of Will Hill. Brendan Twerick will be behind Kendrick Lewis in the rankings. And Terrence Brooks, unfortunately, by the looks of things, may not start or may not return to the NFL or return to the Ravens sidelines until week 7 with a knee surgery, which he had back on February 24th. So I don't want to say the Ravens are thin at the safety position, but by the looks of it, and we're just looking at names here and looking at rankings, they do look thin. If you have Will Hill and Kendrick Lewis and the only healthy safety you have behind him is Brendan Trawick, I think that is a red flag right there if you're looking at safeties, Ray Atkinson.
Yeah, it's kind of a red alert, and everybody's saying, oh yeah, we don't need Matt Edelman. I'm like, well, you kind of do, considering that safety depth was a question going into the draft, and it was kind of addressed, but if you lose one guy, then you're back to square one.
Yeah, and you are going to be coming back with Lardarius Webb and Jimmy Smith, hopefully healthy as your starting cornerbacks this year, but at the same time, starting behind them are Asa Jackson and Rashawn Melvin, if anything were to happen to Jimmy Smith or Lardarius Webb, knock on wood. But what did we remember Brendan Trawick for? Injuring Jacoby Jones.
We remember that.
And not to say Trawick is that guy on the team. You're hoping that he has advanced so far in his early NFL career. But if something were to happen to Will Hill or Kendrick Lewis, the Ravens would be in another funk in the secondary. Now, moving on to the third story here. Justin Forsett. Yep, the 30-year-old Justin Forsett. The Justin Forsett that had a career year in 2014.
The 30-year-old who looks like a 26-year-old.
The Justin Forsett who signed a 3-year deal with the Baltimore Ravens and defying the odds, defying the laws of age in this modern era of the National Football League. Looking at the offensive rankings here in terms of the running back position, you have Justin Forsett as your starter, no question about it. Lorenzo Taliaferro is going to be behind him, and then the third running back is going to be Buck Allen. Let me ask you this, Ray. Let's use worst case scenario here. Who do you think will start over Justin Forsett if he does not produce, say, by week 6, week 7? Which is usually, because you got to remember, the NFL is a fickle sports league. If you're not producing, trust me, even though we signed you to a 3-year deal, we're going to bring the next kid up and give him more carries.
Yes, because money is not guaranteed in the NFL when it comes to the contracts. Not like Major League Baseball where you got the designated guy for assignment, but looking at the state of running back, looking at what the Baltimore Ravens can do, they always like to have multiple running backs in depth, and I remember it harkens back to the three-headed monster that they had way back in 2008, but who do you give it to? Who do you give the reins to other than Forsett if you can't get it? All signs to me point to Taliaferro.
Even though Taliaferro doesn't have many carries, 68 carries in 2014, 4 touchdowns, 292 yards, and average 4.3 yards per carry, which is good. I mean, considering the Ravens' offensive line has been revived with Eugene Monroe and Marshall Yanda taking up the space at offensive line. Hopefully, Kelechi Osemele stays healthy the remainder of the year as well. And you look at everybody else that is on the line there. You look at everybody else in the running back position. I would like to see Buck Allen, USC Trojan Buck Allen, come up and take a spot in case something were to happen to Taliaferro and in case Justin Forsett couldn't produce. But you got to remember, Justin Forsett is a young 30-year-old running back in the NFL. He doesn't necessarily have 1,500 carries in him. He doesn't have that resume that says, well, he's sort of a battle-worn running back in this day and age, like, say, Adrian Peterson.
Well, but I guess he's kind of had a year to recoup, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you taking him first in your fantasy draft?
I don't know. I got to get over I guess I got to get over the whole offseason trials and tribulations. Maybe if Ray Rice comes back and he's healthy and he looks good, maybe I might get on. Anyway, we'll talk about fantasy football another time, but move on to the other stories. Terrell Suggs and Elvis Dumervil, that's your number 4 story right there. And the reason I say that is because these are two linebackers, two multiple-time Pro Bowl linebackers, one being a former NFL Defensive Player of the Year award winner. they're in their 30s, Ray. We can't really, we got to say that. They're in their 30s. Terrell Suggs is 33 years old. This is a guy who, in his NFL career, coming off of a year where he had 12 sacks and has 106.5 career sacks, 27 forced fumbles in his NFL career, may head to the Hall of Fame one day. You got to think that the ceiling is starting to get lowered there for number 55, Terrell Suggs.
It's been lower. I mean, I think the guy could have retired last year and could have just called it a career. Maybe he could even retire with Ray, but nope. He wanted to stay a little bit longer to see what this team can do and see what Joe Flacco and the Baltimore Ravens can do because he thought it was something special.
And Elvis Dumervil is another interesting story, and the reason I say that is there is no denying he had a career year in 2014. 17 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, 37 tackles to notch up to 90 career sacks and 20 forced fumbles. And if this was a guy that won Defensive Player of the Year and if he wins the Super Bowl, he can be in the same league as Suggs and be a future Hall of Famer. But there is a story that is revolving around Elvis Dumervil, and it's not necessarily a good one.
It's not anything to do with a fax machine, is it?
No. It is an tendonitis in his Achilles.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And if you are reading up on MD websites, the recovery time for tendonitis in any part of your foot area, whether it be your heel, whether it be the top of your foot, what have you, they say you can't put weight on that foot in 6 weeks, which is not good.
Are you talking about the same MD sites that you say, I have cold symptoms? You have cancer.
No, not those. Not those. But, I mean, trust me, if some people agree with that analogy and say, well, it did take me 6 weeks, 7 weeks to fully recuperate, then, well, We are talking about average people that go on these sites.
The
and look
average
at,
people that don't have the top of the notch rehab programs, the top of the notch doctors, the best things that money can buy, and along with a couple of cortisone shots.
All right, let's put an over under right now, since we're doing the whole hindsight 2020 thing here with Suggs and Dumervil. Combined sacks over under 30. They had 29 total last year. Okay, let me lower it then. 24.
Over.
You think it'll go over?
Yeah.
Who has a better year?
Dumervil.
Dumervil? Suggs is going to be on the downslope there?
Of course. I think Dumervil, despite the injury, I think if he can get over that and it's kind of the reports are fabricated, then perhaps Elvis Dumervil could be the one that transcends Terrell Suggs and becomes that big-time linebacker that the Ravens have on defense.
Now, the final topic, the number five story going into training camp. And from our talks last year, I feel like this is your favorite position to watch in the NFL, the defensive line. Life for the D-line after number 92, Haloti Ngata. Looking at Brandon Williams, who is your starting nose tackle, looking at Timmy Jernigan, former Florida State standout, as your other defensive end, Chris Canty as your right defensive end. Chris Canty, by the way, coming back cheaper than ever, so the Ravens certainly saved money on that guy, hoping he stayed healthy. Looking at these guys and looking what they're capable of, and also looking at the fact that the Ravens drafted an Iowa defensive tackle, Carl Davis, who has great size and reminds people of Haloti Ngata, do you think the Ravens are going to be better off with Ngata down the road, or do you think they're going to have bumps in the road that is the 2015 regular season there, Ray?
Well, in terms of being the run stopper that Ngata was, it's going to be you might see a couple of upticks in rushing yards before the D-line finally gets it, if they can get it. If not, then if you see running, just their run defense just suffer this season, it could be the reason why that they don't get as far as they could be. It could be run defense.
Well, you're looking at size, and you're looking at certain other aspects as well, height. When you look at that on paper, you say to yourself, well, this reminds me of Sam Adams and Tony Siragusa when they were stuffing the line for Brian Billick back.
You got size.
It's a new NFL.
Size does matter in terms of D linemen, but skill plays a big part as well. How well can you finesse around a blocker?
Well, ask J.J. Watt. He seems to do it every week, and that's why he's one of the best in the NFL.
One of the best? One of the best, Josh?
One of the best overall players.
He is the best.
He's the best at his position, but he's one of the best players overall.
I'm going with the best. In terms of also athletes, I mean, you've seen the guy play baseball?
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen him play baseball. Have you seen Justin Tucker make a kick? That guy, you can say, is the best at his position.
He kicked a 64-yarder in practice on Monday.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, but we're talking about practice, man. Doing a real game. I mean, he has kind of done over 60 yards.
Yep, and as we go to the exhibition games, we will certainly pray that the real games get here fast and quick.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Another week of the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All, and another wrestling legend has passed away. It was Dusty Rhodes a few weeks ago. This week, over the weekend, we lost the Hot Rod, Rowdy Roddy Piper. Gone at the age of 61 due to cardiac arrest. And we're not going to be talking about how he died. We're talking about how this man lived. And with the way Rowdy Roddy Piper lived his life, he was larger than life. And that's the way professional wrestling should be. And he was one of the few professional wrestlers who had mainstream success, meaning that just about anybody in your household knew who Rowdy Roddy Piper was. Your dad knew who he was. Your mother knew who he was. Your sisters. Everybody knew who Rowdy Roddy Piper was just because of the amount of exposure that he had. And also with music in terms of Cyndi Lauper, it was in her videos. And also you had They Live. We need to talk about John Carpenter's They Live in the classic line of, I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Born Roderick Toombs on April 17, 1954 in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada. His first wrestling match was as a teenager against Hall of Famer Larry the Axe Hennig, who squashed him in less than a minute. But of course, since then, Roddy Piper just had a love for professional wrestling and not only grew into the NWA as one of their top faces, which in wrestling terms means the good guy, but grew into then World Wrestling Federation as the top heel bad guy in 1984 when Hulkamania ran wild. I posted something on Facebook the day that Rowdy Roddy Piper left this earth, and I said this: Superman had Lex Luthor, Luke Skywalker had Darth Vader, and Hulk Hogan had this maniac, Rowdy Roddy Piper. And boy, there was no suitable villain that you had on television. And I say this too. There is nobody on TV. There were very few professional wrestlers who I would never change the channel on. Roddy Piper was one of those guys. When he was on the microphone, you stayed and you listened to every single word that he said because you knew he was going to leave you on a cliffhanger.
Wait a minute. Darth Vader to Luke Skywalker. So Rowdy Roddy Piper was Hulk Hogan's father?
Well, don't spoil it for everybody. I'm not.
But that's what you think. Just when you think you have all the answers, I change the question.
That is very true. I see what you did there. Nice, nice. The one thing I remember him from the most, obviously, was the John Carpenter movie, the 88 movie, They Live. Recently, he did several episodes as the maniac on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which is one of my favorite TV shows. It was very hilarious in that, and he just seemed to have had a genuine way of presenting himself to the public, whether it be, you know, at a sporting event, a car collector show, or on television, as a totally different, outlandish character. And it just seemed like his job was to irritate people in some form or fashion and to start something. I remember last year before SummerSlam, before Brock Lesnar took on John Cena, Roddy Piper was staring at Brock Lesnar and giving him that look like he was about to punch the guy. And Lesnar threw a heavy shoulder into him. Piper didn't fall down. He stood by and he took that shoulder. And it just showed how tough of a guy he was. By the way, Roddy Piper, multiple cancer survivor. Guy had back cancer, I believe, several years ago. Was able to beat that. Unfortunately, was not able to, you know, beat Father Time, unfortunately. And I guess that was just the way he lived his life. He lived his life on the edge of a lightning bolt, like Macho Man Randy Savage did, but he did it in a different way. He survived by his children, survived by his wife, survived by many fans around the world, and nothing but heavy adulation for the Rowdy one, Hot Rod.
And I saw somebody post this on Twitter, and I'm blanking on the name right now, but Rowdy Roddy Piper, in typical Piper fashion, had to steal all the attention away from Hulk Hogan.
That is very true. And also, we had to mention this as well, Ronda Rousey, who in her recent title defense against Beth Correa at UFC 190, knocked her out in her own hometown in Brazil in 34 seconds afterwards dedicated the match to the man who gave her the Rowdy nickname, pretty much christened her with the Rowdy nickname, Rowdy Roddy Piper. And I guess you could say we loved Ronda Rousey for standing up to Floyd Mayweather. I guess we love her even more for the fact that she is a genuine fan of professional wrestling. She's kind of like the cute female version of a nerd, and I guess that's the appropriate thing to appreciate about Ronda Rousey.
Except a female version of a nerd that can punch your face in.
That is very true. That is very true. You do not want to make her angry, and you definitely don't want to talk about her father either, because she'll end you quick in your own backyard. And Rowdy Piper certainly must have been proud of that moment right there, and certainly one of the best characters in the history of professional wrestling that will certainly be missed. I will miss him, but I will say this, Ray, I certainly got my money's worth whenever he was on television. And Rowdy Roddy Piper, I thank you for that. And we got to say this right now, the Royal Rumble up in heaven is getting really crowded and very interesting.
Yes, it is. So what are we talking about next week?
Maybe another Raven story will transpire. We already talked about the five stories leading up to Raven's training camp and going into Raven's training camp. Maybe we'll give predictions about the NFL preseason game for actually that's going to be another week or so. But yeah, we'll talk about the Orioles. Hopefully they have a solid week coming up ahead as they are on the West Coast trip.
And this West Coast trip, I'm just hoping for 500 at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hate to say that, but I just got to hope for that because, man, just going on the plane, there's no off day to recuperate from the time. It's getaway day right on the day you lose to the Detroit Tigers. Yeah, tough road trip ahead.
Yep, absolutely. We'll be talking all that and more on the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. Is that right?
Yes, this is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. I am Ray Atkinson.
And I'm Josh Hall.
And we will see you all.
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.